The crowding in the Pacific sea lanes is nothing like the crowding in the skies over Syria. On Sunday, a U.S. fighter jet shot down a Syrian warplane after it had bombed local ground forces supported by the U.S. in the Raqqa province. Russia, backing the Syrian regime headed by President Bashar al-Assad, are you following this, is a large part of Syria's air force. Syria's planes are all Russian-made. So the Russian Defense Ministry called the U.S. hit a military aggression, declaring that it would terminate all communications with the U.S. on future airstrikes and adding that all aircraft, including U.S. war jets, would be considered targets from here on out. Dr. Olga Oleker is director of the Russia and Eurasia Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. Welcome, doctor.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
When it became clear that the U.S. and Russia were going to be operating in this very tight space over Syria, a few years ago, wasn't this situation right here that we're experiencing absolutely inevitable?
Look, I think, I don't know that it was. Until very recently, the United States wasn't targeting Syrian military forces. The shooting down of this aircraft and then a little while ago, the strike on the Syrian airbase were actually a shift. The United States had been supporting forces opposed to Assad, but they hadn't themselves been acting against Assad's military.
Although, how do you see that? This is the situation that I have the problem with. I mean, how do you actually support them without fighting the other guys? I mean, if you're going to create a situation where you're assisting an opposition in taking over a regime or causing the downfall of Bashar al-Assad, that requires one set of tactics. If you're basically just enforcing a stalemate with Russia there helping the other side enforce the same stalemate, how can that possibly accomplish anything?
So in theory, Assad isn't the issue for the United States, right? The U.S. narrative is that we're there to fight ISIS, Daesh, whatever you want to call it. Assad's forces, in theory, are also fighting ISIS, Daesh, whatever you want to call it, except that they're also fighting this opposition. We're supporting the opposition, in theory, against ISIS. So as long as kind of we're all, you know, I think the Russian narrative was we're all fighting ISIS, let's all get along and fight ISIS together. And they were hopeful when Donald Trump came into office that that would hold more water. And the United States would be willing to cut some sorts of deals with Assad. And what we've gotten instead is the United States that still wants to fight ISIS and strike ISIS targets, but is now also striking Syrian government targets.
So I guess the question here is, who will use this as a pretext to escalate tensions here? Is either the U.S. retaliation against Syrian targets likely to be a Russian pretext, as it seems the defense ministry's response is something like that, or will the Trump administration now use this everything's a target policy of the Russians to be a pretext for also escalating the situation?
So I don't think the Russians actually want to escalate the situation. What they don't want to back off on their support for Assad. It is important to them that they continue to back Assad for a wide range of reasons. So they have to respond somehow to a U.S. strike on a Syrian military target. Unfortunately, the only thing they have at this disposal is shutting down this this hotline for communication, which is actually fairly crucial to avoid escalation. And the last time they did this after the U.S. strike on the Syrian base, it came back on fairly quickly. And really what the Russians want is to cut a deal with the United States over Syria, zones of control, something like that. They want to be solving this together. And I think they're frustrated that that's not working out because the United States has turned its sights, so to speak, on Assad as well as on ISIS in a much more overt way than had been the case in the past with just supporting the opposition.
It seems like time is ticking, really, for the Russians to close this deal. In that, as time goes on, Syria doesn't have any materiel. It doesn't. I mean, it's running out of everything. I mean, almost everything over there that's Syrian is actually Russian with the Syrian flag painted on it. I mean, the Syrian Air Force itself is practically a Russian operation.
most people have to buy their weapons somewhere, right? We're not all the United States and Russia building a whole army worth of weapons for ourselves. Most of the rest of the world buys, well, really our weapons, and you know, some French weapons and some other weapons. So I wouldn't focus on that much. The Russian operation really is a support operation. The opposition, ISIS, et cetera, they are fighting Syria, which is backed by Iran and Russia. They're not fighting Russia directly. But Russian air defenses are there, so the Russians are able to say things like, all of your aircraft will be in our sights. Though I suspect they were in their sights before. I mean,
right.
You monitor everything that goes through your airspace.
And so the question is, who's probing here for a weakness? If, as you say, the Russians are frustrated and want a deal to be negotiated quickly for whatever reason. I mean, my theory doesn't work, but for whatever reason, is the Trump administration likely to exert pressure?
I think the Trump administration has made it clear that it will strike at Syrian military targets under certain circumstances. We can debate where that fits into international law and so on and so forth, but we have two precedents now. Whether this second one was directed, from above, whether that's part of a real policy or strategy, or whether that was an immediate response to that Syrian aircraft's attack on forces that were aligned with the coalition, I can't judge, right? I don't know the answer to that. But I do caution against assuming that it is part of a clear strategy.
The Trump strategy is clear. Okay, fine. So, which just leads me to my last question, and that is, you speak very articulately about all of this that's going on here, but do you, when you step back from it, consider this to be a sustainable level of disorganization over Syria? Is this more likely to, is there an orderly path out of this, or is some outlier going to basically reset the table?
Look, it's a disaster. It's been a disaster this entire time. It was a disaster before the Russians came in. It became a slightly different disaster when the Russians came in. It's now a new form of disaster with the United States shifting its tactics. I don't see good ways out of it. I think, it's going to continue to be ugly and awful, and people will continue to die. Whether a negotiated solution can make that ugliness slightly less ugly over time. I mean, I think that's what everybody who wants to see resolution is hoping for. But it's tough to see it clearly because people's strategic goals are so confused and there are so many parties to this fight.
Dr. Olga Oliker is director of the Russia and Eurasia Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. Doctor, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.